Hello, welcome everybody to the first Kaleidoscope session. We've got a nice mix of talks from across the world of art to get you inspired. And our first speaker will be talking about Kaggle competition. So welcome, Anthony.
Thanks. Hi, everyone. Thanks for coming out. Just a quick show of hands before I kick off. Who's heard of Kaggle before? Okay, so a lot of the room. Keep your hand up if you have competed in a Kaggle competition before. All right, we have some. Very good. Hopefully by the end of this, I can get you excited, get more of you excited about getting involved. I'm going to really focus on two things. I'm going to do a very quick introduction to Kaggle, and then I'm going to talk about some of the tools that we are launching on Kaggle that are useful to R users that will help you learn new tips and tricks when it comes to R. So, first of all, if you come to Kaggle, this is what you see. You see a list of, or this is the main thing you see, I should say. You see a list of competitions. These range from taking MRIs and diagnosing heart failure, which we did with Booz Allen and the NIH, through to improving Home Depot's search relevance algorithm. So really a huge range of applications, ranging from research and medical imaging through to very, very tangible commercial problems. The competitions always follow a very standard format. We have a training set, we have a test set. People train their algorithms on the training set and then they upload their predictions on the test set. And we show people how they're performing on a live leaderboard. Of course, we in reality have several test data sets in order to prevent against overfitting and such things. But on the leaderboard, as soon as you submit, you see how you're performing relative to others. And each day, people try and outperform what others in the competition have done. And so a typical competition will last for 2 to 4 months. And at the end, the winner will win prize money. And in exchange, particularly for the commercial competitions, they'll give some kind of license to the company that hosted the competition. So the thing that makes this interesting is firstly, you have a lot of people with a lot of different perspectives. And secondly, you also get live feedback on how you're performing relative to others. So you can see if your techniques are working, and very often there are tips and tricks shared in the forums. So this is a problem we did with NASA's Jet Propulsion Lab in Pasadena, California. And what they wanted to do was they wanted to take images of galaxies and detect very precisely the ellipticity of the galaxies. So the first person to make a good entry in this competition was Martin O'Leary, who was a glaciologist at Cambridge University at the time, and he got into first place. And he was very happy until somebody passed him. And so what does Martin do next? Well, Martin gets ahead of them, and someone passes him, and he passes them. And eventually what happens is you'll notice the scores are plateauing. There's a limit to how much signal that one can get out of a data set, and so competitions turn out to be a very effective way to feel out where that limit is. And so to the extent that we do work in either research or with companies, typically what they're most interested in is getting to that frontier. This is a normalized version of that frontier chart where we have made we've basically inverted it. So in this case, before it was a measure of error, the lower the better. We've inverted all our metrics so that it's the higher the better, and then we've broken out our competitions into deciles. And you can see some of the easy competitions converge very quickly, and some of the harder competitions, I think there's an argument to be made, didn't run long enough and actually didn't converge. So what we try and do is we try and run the harder competitions for longer, typically 4 months, and the easier competitions for shorter, so people aren't spending all their time over-engineering the final result. The community now is around about 600,000, really a huge range, so three main groups, I would say, in our community. Number one motivation is people who want to learn. So this is, by the way, our user rankings. This is more a bit of fun than a serious set of rankings. It motivates both performance but also participation. So a lot of people come to Kaggle in order to learn, to get exposure to different problems and to benchmark their performance against others. Also as a credential, you see Kaggle showing up in a lot of CVs nowadays as a way, if you have a background in physics, it's kind of a good way, and you want a job as a data scientist, it's a good way to prove that you have the right set of skills. And then finally, we're quite widely used by researchers as a way to, if you have an interesting technique, you write a paper and then, going through the publication process, takes a long time before it starts to get attention. It turns out that if you beat 1,000 people in a competition, they're paying very close attention to what you did that they didn't do. So those are the three main motivations for people to participate. Just to give you a sense of how much activity, we have about 100,000 machine learning models. It's a little bit out of date, but we're averaging about 1,000 machine learning models each month submitted to our competitions. So it's an enormous amount of time that people are spending on the site. I'm going to show you this new environment we have, which is all about promoting the reproducible sharing of code. And we initially focused this on our competitions, but we've now broadened it out. So R is, just for interest, R is, over the last 3 months, the second most significant language on Kaggle. I know this is, I'm in dangerous territory. here, showing a chart that has Python being more widely used. I think that a lot of this is actually a relatively recent trend. In Kaggle competitions, we really see two approaches winning. So we have gradient boosting machines, and the XGBoost package or the XGBoost implementation is by far the most popular. And so that you have both R and Python packages. Now we're starting to see for a lot of the image, text, and speech competitions, deep neural networks do very well. And so the package ecosystem around deep neural networks is stronger on Python than it is on R, which I think it's what's given Python a little bit of a boost over R. So I reference scripts, and I reference people sharing code through scripts. What do I actually mean by this, and why are we doing it? To motivate this, I'm going to take you to our website. So hopefully you can see reasonably well. So we have you come to Kaggle and you see all these different competitions. A set of competitions that we have are called Getting Started competitions. Probably less targeted at this audience, but still a problem that probably a lot of people in this room are familiar with is this MNIST data set. So this is we somewhat cynically call it a gateway drug to get people addicted to Kaggle, and then they keep coming back. Although I think there are probably more problematic things to become addicted to. So this is a competition to take handwritten digits. This is the MNIST data set, and classify them algorithmically. And what we have noticed is that lots and lots of people. We have very, very active forums. So I said that one of the main motivations in people coming to Kaggle is actually to learn, not to make money, not necessarily to win. And I think this is borne out by the fact that this is not a real competition, it's more a bit of fun. We have over 1,000 posts where people are sharing ideas and tips and tricks. One of the very common things that people share is they share code. So this is, again, I probably shouldn't do this, but a Python example. This person is sharing a Python neural network. In order to get it running, so you can see he's attached it to this forum thread, and he gives some instructions for getting it running. You need pandas, scikit-learn, matplotlib, numpy, nolearn, and lasagna. You need the same version of Python. You need the same versions of those libraries. The lasagna API changed relatively recently, so if you're not in sync with his version, you need the same data set. And so he's very generously shared his code, and no one's done anything with it. No one's replied, no one's commented, no one said thank you. So it's a little bit dispiriting. So what we launched in recognition of the fact that people actually want to be able to share code, we launched this environment that we call Scripts. There's also a Jupyter Notebook version where you have an R, Python, or Julia environment. The data is automatically read in, and so people can start coding immediately and then you hit run script, and the code will run in Docker containers on our servers. So you can use this, we don't charge for it, but there is a catch. The catch is that anything you run has to be shared publicly. And so you can see here on this competition, we have a list of all the different scripts that people have run. So the most popular is a TensorFlow deep neural network. So that's the Google deep learning library. There's Random Forest. There's other convolutional neural networks. And you can see here are the number of upvotes. So the TensorFlow deep neural network has been upvoted 114 times. You can see that there's a live discussion on it. There's 28 comments on that particular script. I'm going to show you one that's less popular that I think is really elegant, though. So This is a user who has uploaded, basically classified the digits using random forest, and then they've visualized the proximity of the digits to each other. So you can see his code, and then you can see what the code produces. So you see the code and you see the results all directly there. And so you can see here, the 7s are near each other, the 9s are near each other, the 4s are near each other. So this is quite a nice diagnostic, right? It's showing you, it's showing him where his algorithm is performing well. In the ones in red are the ones he's getting wrong. He's getting the 7s with the dashes through them wrong. This one looks a bit like a 9. See how it has the tail over it? So it's not a surprise that it's been grouped with the 9s, and it's not a surprise that it's been mistaken for a 9. Now, let's say I want to fix the 7s with the dashes through them. All I have to do is hit fork script, and internet connection willing, I get his code running in an environment that I can just be editing directly. And so I'm showing you the online IDE version, but we also have a notebook version, so you can convert this into a notebook and play with it in more of an interactive environment as well. And so, you know, what happens is, what we see is, when you do two things, you give people a one-click fork, and you show what the output looks like. This isn't even one of the more popular scripts. You can see it's been forked 34 times. So there's something in lowering the barrier to being able to build off each other's code that makes people much more likely to do so. And so just the implementation of scripts, I think, I forget what the numbers are, but it's increased the amount of code that people share on Kaggle 3,000x or some very large number. Now, in recognition of the fact that people have really, really taken to scripts, it's become a huge part of Kaggle competitions. Notwithstanding the fact that, you know, people are competing, it seems kind of odd that there's a lot of sharing going on. We have started to roll out scripts on a broader range of things, giving people a broader range of things that they can do. So one thing we started doing is publishing public data sets. So anyone can come to Kaggle, upload a public data set, upload a script, and basically be able to share both their data set and their code. And so some of the big use cases for this have been reproducible research, which is probably a topic. I think we'll hear a bit more about reproducible research in the next talk, but it's if you've done research, you know, typically you put your data somewhere and you put your code somewhere else, and this is a place where you can put the data and the code both together. They'll both be executable, so that other people can actually rerun the analysis. And you also have the nice benefit of having a huge audience. So we have a community of 600,000. So it both draws attention to the research while also giving others a chance to kind of play around a little bit with the data and hopefully feedback and start a conversation around the data set and the research. Also some quite a lot of fun stuff that people have added. So this is the Census Bureau's data set on US baby names. So this person has written a notebook looking at the impact of presidential names on the popularity of a name. I always thought that it'd be interesting to compare the impact of presidential names to Oscar winners and see which had a bigger impact. And Nobel Prize winners. I think I can guess what the answer is. When there's something in the news, whether it be Brexit or Hillary Clinton's emails, very often a data set goes up and a conversation starts around the data set. So this is an example that's been in the news for a long, long, long time now. Hillary Clinton's emails, and people do all sorts of interesting things, such as, I'll just go down, looking at the sentiment with which Hillary speaks in her emails about different countries. So she's not that keen on Iraq, Libya, or Afghanistan, it turns out. You can see this has been forked 14 times. You have the code. And so if you want to do sentiment analysis on the emails that you transact with your coworkers, you know, you have the code that can do that immediately. Kind of a dangerous thing to let loose. So, you know, where are we going with this? A couple of things. I think we're very keen on supporting more data sharing and not data sets that just sort of sit there in an empty room, but that a big live conversation happens around. I think we're quite enthusiastic about supporting the reproducible research ecosystem, so you can put up your papers and your data sets. Further out, what we'd really like to do with this is be able to sort of smartly guide you towards interesting analysis that other people have done. So you'll notice here that this person who wrote the script has loaded in this library I'm not going to try and pronounce that does sentiment analysis. So let's say it becomes clear once you start coding your script that you're trying to do sentiment analysis as well. Well, we would love to be able to direct you to five other scripts that people have run on data sets that look like yours that help you do sentiment analysis. But we're aiming for this to be a really good resource for the data analysis community. So I'm going to stop there. I think we have time. I think we're allowed to take questions. Is that correct? Yeah. So I'm happy to take questions. What's the format? Is there a microphone or people just put their hand up?
Yeah, there is a lady with a microphone over there. She will come to you if you put your hand up. So we've got a question over here.
If you yell it out, I'll repeat it.
Tons of biological data, which people are putting on repositories from NCBI, for instance, or other repositories. Which is just kind of a data dump. Do you have a link, or do you plan to make a link to those data sets that are hosted elsewhere?
Yeah, I mean, for the moment, so the question was, do we plan to link to other data sets? Like there are big repositories, do we plan to link to them? The approach we've always taken to developing features on Kaggle is we'll do what our users find valuable. So if we get a lot of requests for linking to a specific data set, we'll link to it. If it needs to be the case that we need to create some kind of general linking, general API that links to public data sets, we'll do it. We try and be as responsive to we have a large user base. We have the benefit of getting to watch how people use our products. And so as we see, the ways people want to interact with it, we will build out in that direction. So that is to say, we have no concrete plans. For now, the only way to get data sets on is to upload them yourself. But if there's demand for that, that's something we will build for sure.
Yeah, quick question.
So I'm trying to get the popularity of data analysis software, and there's many ways it's like a thing to do it, and your website is one of those. But I think the last time you published a complete list
of how popular the software was in your competitions, it's a couple years old.
Yeah, it's very old.
So if you guys, since you're experts in data analysis, it'd be great if you had that, some kind of live tracking of what are the most popular kinds of software, what are the most popular kinds of algorithms, so anyone could just go there at any moment and see what the last 12 months worth of competitions were like.
It's an excellent point. So we don't systematically track this. There are ways to track it kind of ambiently. So for instance, we have very active forums. You can see what kind of packages people talk about in the forums, what type of software people are tracking in the forums. I can tell you this, that really only two algorithms at the moment are winning competitions. One is the XGBoost implementation of gradient boosting machines, both in R and Python, and the other is the various flavors of neural networks, so convolutional neural networks for image competitions, recurrent neural networks for things that involve speech or some kind of sequence, EEGs, ECGs. The most popular packages mostly are in Python for the deep neural networks, so Theano, Keras. There are some non-Python popular languages as well, like Torch and Cafe.
Okay, thanks.
And TensorFlow.
Okay, I think we now need to move on to our next speaker. If I can...
Thank you.